Hello, and welcome to another episode of The CG Garage, episode number 16, brought to you by Chaos Group. I recorded this episode when I was in San Jose, California, attending the GPU Technology Conference, better known as GTC. I was the only person from the LA office that went. Gina, Lon, David, Sean, none of those guys went. But I was accompanied by some really cool guys. Four of our developers from the Sophia office, our main office, went, who are obviously very involved in GPU technology, as well as Kevin Margot, who we all know, and who's we did a podcast with, and he's been working on some GPU content for us. He's been actually making a short with a GPU, so he's been really a great use case scenario for us to figure out how to get stuff done. The conference itself is pretty interesting. It is really geared towards developers. It's about developers sharing their ideas and their problems and how they solve them when they are programming for the GPU. And it's not just for rendering on a GPU, but all kinds of stuff, including deep learning and all kinds of random things that are being developed on the GPU. Our guys were really cool about it. They really shared their ideas. They went out there, they talked about the problems they had and about how they worked on the code. They made their presentation for developers, and which was really cool. It's not really meant as a big marketing push to push your latest release of your software. It's really about showcasing how you do things on a GPU and sharing that. And Vlado was there, who is in this podcast, and he did a great presentation about that, and I asked him to break it down. We also have Boris on the podcast, who you guys may not know, and Boris is actually our product manager for V-Ray App SDK and V-Ray Cloud, which you may not know anything about. So I figured it would be cool to have him talk about what we did, because we did some really cool stuff on that, including everything we've done on Construct is really built upon the infrastructure that he made possible. So hopefully you guys enjoy it. You guys know what to do if you need to make comments or anything else. And that's it. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
So we're here at GTC, San Jose. What do you guys think of San Jose so far?
That's a beautiful place.
It's
nice weather.
It's nice weather, right?
Yeah.
Silicon Valley. It's interesting. Different around here. But what we did today, or for the last few days, we've been here, how many are there? There's five of us here, right? So there's Vlado's here, and Boris is here, and Blago and Nicola is here.
Yes.
Right? And so, Boris, we're going to figure out a little bit about you, and everyone knows about Vlado already, but tell me, what does Blago do in the company?
Blago is one of our developers who works on V-Ray RT GPU. He did the coding for some of the features that we will have in the new service pack that we will release maybe in a month or so.
Okay.
He knows the GPU code pretty well, and he's a very smart guy too.
Right. Yeah. He's a cool guy too, which is funny because I wanted him to be on the podcast and he would seem like the kind of guy that could really talk, but
yeah, he's not really comfortable.
He's not comfortable with presenting or talking.
No,
but he seems like the kind of guy that would be.
Well, eventually.
Yeah, eventually he'll have to.
He will be soon, maybe.
Yeah. Nicola, what does he do? Because he's a pretty interesting guy too.
Nicola's story is a little bit more interesting because originally he worked on various V-Ray related projects. He did the integration of the VR mats in 3D Studio Max.
Oh, right. Okay.
The integration of the VR mat editor and the rendering part. He also worked on various other little things in V-Ray for Maya and V-Ray for 3ds Max.
Right.
Last year when we spoke to Kevin about V-Ray in Motion Builder, we thought that Nicola would be a good fit for that because he's familiar with Python.
With Python, right. Was he familiar with App SDK at that time?
No.
Ah, okay.
No. Zero experience. But we gave him the task to see how easy it would be to hook up V-Ray App SDK to Motion Builder, and he did a pretty good job out of it.
Yeah, he did. He got something functioning working in just a matter of a few weeks, right?
Yeah, which is pretty cool.
It was about 2 weeks maybe or something.
2 weeks.
For the initial technical preview.
Right. And for those who don't know who Boris is, Boris, you're the product manager for App SDK.
Yep.
And also for V-Ray Cloud, which we'll talk about in a bit, right?
Yes.
So you have the App SDK. What's been interesting about App SDK is that it seems to be an interesting way to plug in V-Ray and V-Ray RT into different things.
Exactly.
And because we're here at the GTC, the V-Ray RT into different things is kind of the interesting thing, because we can make sort of very, very fast rendering happening in places that you wouldn't expect it.
Exactly.
So anyway, okay. So before we get into that, since you did mention in your presentation, let's go through some bullet point quick items that people may be interested in knowing, and what's new in V-Ray for the GPU.
Okay, so some of the things that we worked on, my presentation here at GTC covered everything that we did since GTC last year.
Right.
So some of the things that I talked about, people have actually already seen in various builds of V-Ray, like the hair and hair shading, the subsurface scattering.
So hair and subsurface scattering is new to it, right?
Yeah, this was in the builds that we released at the end of last year. But the other stuff, anisotropic reflections, QMC sampling, UDIM textures, this is all coming in the next service pack that is coming out hopefully in May.
Okay, so tell me about QMC sampling, because that's something that I think is really interesting.
We've had our own DMC sampling in V-Ray for a long time, and it works well. It's not a bad way to sample things, but it's not the most optimal way to do things. And it's not a very big problem for our production renderer, because we can shoot multiple rays from materials, and we can shoot multiple rays for lights. But in V-Ray RT GPU, we use a lot of random sampling. So we have to choose only one light to trace, and we have to choose just one material layer to calculate.
Right.
So getting the samples to be as well distributed as possible is very important.
Okay.
And QMC allows us to do that. It's basically the most optimal way to do this kind of sampling.
Right.
So we were very happy that NVIDIA licensed this technology to us, and I hope that it'll be really useful for V-Ray RT GPU and not for our users.
Right. So basically, we're only using QMC sampling for our GPU rendering.
Yes.
Because that's where it's the most efficient, and that's where it makes the most sense.
Yep.
So that means that basically, I mean, we had our own DMC sampler for a while, which I think is still, like you said, it was good. But I think anyone who's using QMC sampler obviously would have to, we're partnering with NVIDIA on this, which is a kind of a cool thing to have them help us out with that and make it work. And this makes a difference, especially when you're doing very, very, very fast renders, right? Because you can get the first initial results are cleaner, faster, right?
Yeah, it just looks, the noise is structured in a better way. It just looks more pleasant.
Looks more pleasant.
Yep.
It doesn't necessarily mean there's more samples or not. It just
no,
has
it's
a
just
better
the
distribution.
Same amount of samples. They're distributed in a better way.
Okay. Well, that's I think an important part to note about that. It's not necessarily that it makes it faster. It makes it look better faster.
Yes. Yeah. Well, at one point, like there's cases where if you want to get to a certain level of quality, with QMC sampling, you can reach that level in half as many iterations.
Right.
You will eventually get the same images, but QMC allows us to get there faster.
Okay. And what about the ISO surfaces? You mentioned that was an interesting problem to solve not ISO surfaces, anisotropic reflections.
Right. So that was a problem, not because it's difficult to do, but because it requires additional information for every mesh. Because anisotropy is usually based on a UV channel. Because
okay.
You have to define which is the anisotropic vector.
Right.
So if you want to do something like a brush metal, you have to be able to specify the direction of all the different scratches.
Mm-hmm.
And on in the CPU render, we calculate this information on demand whenever the user assigns an historic material to a mesh. And we had to figure out a way to do the same thing on the GPU. We can't really upload the vectors needed for anisotropic reflections for every UV channel for every single mesh, because that would be a lot of additional data.
Okay.
And GPU memory is, there's so little of it anyway.
Right,
so
right.
So we have to save as much as possible. And it took a little while to figure out a good way to do it. And we had to come up with a system that allows us. We had a very fixed system in VRT GPU that we only had a certain number of buffers for geometry, for materials, for bitmaps. But we needed to extend this so that we can upload any kind of arbitrary information and be able to, from any shader, and be able to handle that efficiently.
Okay. Well, that's pretty cool. So I want to just go back a year ago, just real quick. And a year ago, we had our second GTC, right?
Actually, a third one.
A third one. Okay. Anyway, so GTC last year, it was my first one, but I remember that was sort of when we started to get really involved in the VCA, right?
Yes.
It's right after that the VCA came out. And for those of you who don't know what a VCA is, it's a machine. It's called the the virtual computing appliance? No.
Visual
computing appliance. And it's made by NVIDIA, and it's basically a big thing that's a 4U rack mounted box that holds 8 GPUs in it.
GPUs.
It's a pretty powerful thing. But what started to happen with NVIDIA, and we already had V-Ray working on there, is that they basically were able to look at what was they were starting to put it out to clients and going out and testing things. And it turns out that there was a lot of people that they were looking at that were using V-Ray on it. So suddenly, Vlado and Boris and I were talking to clients about getting V-Ray working on the VCA a lot, which was kind of an interesting thing. And I think that what was interesting to me is that as people were doing it, we started to notice now people were using V-Ray GPU, which they weren't necessarily using before. There was a big upshift of people using GPU rendering, I think, last year.
And yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then it started to have a lot more requests because of that, right? So that's why the big GPU, it was almost like on demand. It's like, oh, they want this, they need that, they need this, they need that.
Yeah.
And there were some strange requests in there, but that's fine. That's what we do, is we respond to our clients. But it was interesting to see a lot of these features were based on, oh, can it do this, can it do that? Because that's our clients were using GPU rendering a lot more. Do you think that's going to be an ongoing trend? We're going to see a bigger percentage of people using GPU rendering?
I think so.
Yeah.
Maybe Vlado can confirm, but
sense for a lot of use cases. It's actually possible to get an image out of a GPU a lot faster than you would on the CPU.
Right. And then the big problem has always been the amount of RAM that it can do.
Yeah, but NVIDIA released the Titan X, which has 12 gigabytes, which is, you can fit a lot of data in that. So maybe not everything, but for a lot of scenes, it's more than enough.
Well, let's talk about the Titan X for a second, because I think that was an interesting announcement this week. And the Titan X is basically, we were mostly banging away on K6000s last year. K6000s was our brute big machine, GPU that we used. And that machine, we liked it because it had 12 gigs of VINI memory and it was fast, right? So a lot of our people that were trying it, they were trying things on K6000s. And then now, of course, we heard today that they announced the M6000, which is the Maxwell version of the same card.
Yep.
And that card is basically, how much we tested that card,
yes,
right? And how much faster do you say
20 to 30% increase, performance increase.
20 to 30% increase.
Yeah. Okay. It's pretty much depends on the scene, but it's average is about that.
So it's nice and fast, right?
Yeah, it's definitely faster.
And now my question is, what is the Titan X? Because the Titan X is a Maxwell-based card with 12 gigs of video memory, right?
Yep.
So it's almost identical. If did we performance check the Titan X yet?
One of our QA guys actually tested it in our benchmark scene, and he posted the results on the forum.
Okay, and it's about the same as an M6000?
I don't know, to be honest, because there I don't think there's a result for the M6000, but I have to ask.
Okay.
The guys, but I think the results are very close.
They would exactly be very close, right? So they would be close to identical. Now, here's the thing that's amazing. It's 30% faster than the K6000. It's got the same amount of memory, and it's 1/5 the price.
Right.
So, and I'm sure people at NVIDIA would be okay with me saying that if anyone wants to buy a big beefy card, and what I would recommend to them is probably to get a Titan X at this point. And the extra money that you're buying, you're going to have to ask NVIDIA what they actually get out of the M6000 compared to
with
Titan
the Titan X.
X,
by the way, you got the same CUDA cores that you have in K6000 and Maxwell.
So have the same.
Yeah, it's about 3,000.
About 3,000 cores on for $1,000. That's pretty hardcore.
And the dev box is something interesting that they, but it's for, you know, deep learning stuff.
It's made for deep learning. Yeah. That dev box looks pretty cool, but it is expensive.
Yeah.
It's what definitely is it, 15 grand or something? Yeah.
It's
expensive.
Only for developers.
Yeah, it's made for developers. But I think it's interesting to have that, you know, the Titan X is a good card. Now, there's one thing that stood out in the keynote when they were talking about it is that the single precision versus double precision, and the double precision was a lot slower than single precision.
Right.
Now, and I don't think that's the case with the K cards, right?
Yes.
So how does that affect rendering?
Well, specifically for a very RT GPU, it doesn't affect us at all because we don't really use double precision arithmetic anywhere.
Okay.
It's all single precision. So for VA, this doesn't really matter at all.
So we take it full advantage of the speed and single precision.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's cool to know. All right, let's go. Just one more thing. What are the challenges to rendering about on a GPU?
The way it's programmed.
Like
a few years ago when we were just starting to work on VRT GPU, we had a lot of issues with drivers crashing, the compiler is not working. You would change a single thing from a plus to minus and it will refuse to run. And you have no idea why.
Or you were telling us that you get a blue screen of death with one wrong line of code.
Yep. Or if you just happen to read memory from the wrong place, the whole machine would crash.
Right.
And you don't know where the problem is. You just run your GPU program and it crashes and you don't know why.
Right.
Things are a lot better now.
And you guys are using the CUDA 7, the new CUDA 7 stuff?
We tried it, but our production code is still on CUDA 6.5.
Okay. So yeah, tell me about the debugging thing that you guys made, which sounds pretty cool.
But it's still difficult. Even today, you don't get blue screens anymore. But it's still difficult to figure out what's going on in the GPU code. And there is NVIDIA Insight, which sort of helps, but it's still, at least when we tested it, it was slow to run. And it was just difficult to use. So we really wanted, ideally, to debug the code, the CUDA code, with the same ease that you could do with a C++ code. So, and then we realized that we can just, because it's all based, CUDA is based on C, so it's a very similar language to C. And we already could compile our code for both CUDA and OpenCL just using some defines. So we realized that we can actually compile it as regular C code and run it on the CPU. It's not fast. It's maybe 10 times slower than GPU code running on a real GPU.
Right.
But for debugging, it was really, really easy. It's just like regular code. You can examine variables. You can step through functions. And you can figure out what's going on. You can also debug memory accesses a lot more easier because on the CPU, you can make it give you an error whenever you try to access invalid memory, which is not the case on the GPU.
Okay. But you were able to do that now.
Yes. So now we can just, when we develop the code, we can just debug it on the CPU version. And when that works properly, we're pretty much sure it, and the CUDA version will also work properly.
Okay. Well, I think it was really cool to see your presentation because, you know, it was very much, it was a presentation that was geared towards telling people about programming and what it's the challenges you were dealing with programming on the GPU.
I don't know if it was like the right thing to do because it was very technical, and I realized that it's probably difficult for a lot of people to actually figure out what I'm talking about.
I think it was the right thing to do because there are other technical people there that were responding to you.
The presentation was really for them.
The presentation is for the guys. It's not for the media. It's not for the press. It wasn't about a marketing presentation. We did have a marketing presentation in a sense. I will call it a marketing, but even though it wasn't. But we did show some of the use cases we did with it. So we showed Construct and we showed that, which was really cool. And I'll talk about that in a second.
By the way, I want to mention something. We already have the first baby GPU in the team. So one of our core developers at Sofia team that is doing GPU Dido is having baby, right?
Is it a boy or a girl?
I really don't know. Is it a girl?
Is her name okay. Cuda?
I don't know.
I hope not.
So I just want to give him greetings.
Or something. Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. Well, definitely. That's wonderful. That's really cool.
And he was struggling a lot with, you know, developing back maybe 2-3 years ago when it was extremely hard to develop for CUDA.
Good. Now he can relax a little bit more and have kids, right?
Yeah, he's having fun, right? Because he's doing his code in CPU and it's definitely a different story.
Yeah, well, that's cool. And then there was another thing that I think Blago presented as well, although as you mentioned, he doesn't always like presenting, but he mentioned something about memory and the idea of running out of memory on the GPU because that is a challenge, right?
Right. So 12 gigabytes is a lot, but we have clients that want to render gigabytes and gigabytes of pictures.
Sure.
Especially when you start doing UDIMM textures in Mari, you can generate heaps of data very easily.
Right.
And people wanted to be able to render those kinds of things on the GPU. Geometry is not really that big of a deal. You can fit a lot of stuff in 12 gigabytes.
Sure.
Many millions of polygons. But textures are a problem. And we try to figure out ways to do out-of-core texture paging so that you could render an unlimited amount of textures on the GPU. And Blago came up with a way to do that. And it slows down the GPU code a little bit, but it's still a lot faster than the CPU.
Is there an average that you can say? Is like, oh, if you use out-of-core? Well, depends on how many textures you have,
yes,
right?
But in the worst case, it's 3 times slower, and in the best case, it's just 30% slower.
Okay,
so it's not too bad,
but it's still 10 times faster than using CPU.
Right. Yes. So because the CPU or the GPU is like 20 times faster than GPU, right?
Well,
average.
It depends, but you still get a faster rendering than you do on the CPU.
So okay, well, instead of saying 3 times slower, let's put it a different way. Okay, so let's say if you don't use out-of-core, let's say it's about 20 times faster than CPU. But if you do use out-of-core, worst case scenario, it's 3 or 4, 5 times faster than CPU?
Right, yeah.
Okay, so out-of-core is still 5 times faster than CPU, worst case scenario, which is still pretty good.
Yeah, it's extremely good.
Right, so there's a huge advantage, and therefore now it's starting to become the point where you can just render a lot on the GPU.
Yeah, because the other way, you have to scale down the images, and then the result and the output of the rendering will be not good enough.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. And then he mentioned something about how he's doing it, as opposed, you know, if when you run out of memory, you're falling off a cliff, but you're trying to do it so you fall down the stairs instead. So how does that work?
Yeah.
That was an interesting description somehow. Yeah. Explain that.
Well, it's because when we first started researching out-of-core rendering for textures, there was really no information anywhere in the internet. And the few people that had actually done it, we spoke to other GPU developers, and they mentioned that as soon as they had to do out-of-core, the speed drops dramatically.
Right.
So that was the part where you fall off a cliff.
Right.
So, and we didn't really wanted. We wanted the slowdown to be gradual. So if the memory is just about enough, but you have a little bit more textures, you would get just a little bit of slowdown.
Right.
And I think we managed to do that. But of course, we have to actually get it to users and see how well it works.
So that's your comparison when you say it's just a little bit slower, meaning the 30%. But then if you use a lot of out-of-core memory, then you go to 3 times slower.
Yes.
Okay, I understand now. Okay, well, that makes sense. And anyway, that was a really interesting presentation by Blago, because basically it's showing how we're developing out of core texture. And when is that coming?
It's hopefully coming in the next service pack, VRT.
So sometime this year, you're thinking, for sure.
Yeah, in May, but we still have a little bit of work to do. So if we don't manage to get it as stable as we want, we'll probably keep it as a hidden option so people can still try it out, but we'll probably won't enable it officially.
Okay, cool. But okay, so let's go back to the VCA. And so one of the interesting things that Boris has been doing is been doing a bunch of stuff on the VCA, right?
Yes.
We've been able to access that with the help of NVIDIA. They loaned us a VCA that we can try at work, and we've been doing a bunch of stuff on there. And you've been developing a bunch of stuff on there, right? Tell us some of the things that you've put on the VCA that's pretty cool.
So most of the things that we're doing there are based on the, you know, the app SDK. I don't know if the guys know anything about the app SDK.
I'll mention it briefly. I think I've mentioned it before, but the app SDK is, and correct me if I'm wrong,
yep.
But the app SDK is, because I'm practicing, so every time someone asks me, I'll make sure I get it right.
Oh, right.
You can correct me now.
Of course.
The app SDK is basically a wrapper that goes around V-Ray and allows you to program, plug V-Ray into anything. Yep. Much simpler. Instead of using C++ code, you can use Python, JavaScript,
yeah, you
C#,
can,
whatever.
You can use almost any language. I mean, right. Most of the languages in the world. So like Java, like .NET,
right.
C++, JavaScript, if you will.
The
app SDK, we're targeting the developers, not right. The 3D artists. It's a product especially for developers.
Right.
And
but it makes it really simple for developers.
Yeah, we try to do it as simple as possible. And still, you know, you have the power of V-Ray. So V-Ray is some kind of a black box for you.
Right.
But you can still control it, monitor, you can feed it with data and get in real-time images, for example, from right. V-Ray, which is very, very easy. And that's the way, in order to build some kind of a 3D host application with a nice visualization, rendering visualization, that, mm-hmm. that's the way that you have to do it. I mean, this is the pipeline, using App SDK, for example.
Okay, well, that's pretty cool. So that's what you started with.
Yeah, we started App SDK about maybe 2.5-3 years ago.
Right.
Under heavy development. And in parallel, we developed this thing we called V-Ray Cloud.
Yep.
And this is what we're using inside the big cluster at NVIDIA and also the VCA servers.
Okay.
So because one of the things that we have to solve is how to move a lot of data using public internet infrastructure between, for example, the workstation or the computer of the 3D artist to the cluster.
Right.
And that's a big issue. And that's why we have V-Ray Cloud and... We did a lot of experiments, and essentially V-Ray Cloud is just a V-Ray inside, but it's for
V-Ray
scaling,
right?
So you can scale so much in V-Ray Cloud.
Yeah. So yeah. V-Ray Cloud distributes and then gives you back feedback through a public internet access.
Exactly.
And we can talk about that a little bit because we want to talk about our example that we did in Motion Builder, and we'll get
right.
to that.
Yes.
But I want to talk about some of the other cool little things, because you did a lot of cool things when we first started using the VCA with Kevin as an example.
Right.
And you started making little tools for everyone to try out.
Oh, yeah.
You made an application that literally opened up a website, and then you said, here's the application to turn on DR. Bloop, bloop. And then you made a render.
It was a job manager, yeah.
We made a job manager inside of a website for us.
It was maybe 10 days or something.
Right.
Because, you know, the power of V-Ray Cloud is not, it's a software actually that gives you a very powerful API.
Right.
And we use this API in order to create a job manager. We didn't have a job manager.
Right.
Because V-Ray Cloud was designed for be like interactive rendering inside a browser.
Right.
Or any kind of device you can use. But in case with Kevin, and we wanted to use this enormous power that we have compute power. And because we already had V-Ray Cloud installed there, and we decided, okay, we're not going to use another job manager or something like this.
We're
just going to develop our own job manager. It will be a simple one.
Just right? something to get the job done.
But yeah, it was working just perfectly great.
So just to give people,
Kevin was so happy with this.
Oh, yeah. Well, it had a lot of features in it. And I was like, oh, wow, look at that. As an example, right? So just to give people an idea, it's like I needed a job manager. We did something on the VCA. Kevin wanted to render a whole bunch of construct frames on there. You made a job manager because we could have used Deadline. We could have tried to use Deadline. No one's really put a job manager on the VCA.
Yeah, no. There is
so we made our own. And it's just in a web browser. You open it up and you go here and you drop your job in there and it starts to render. You can see the progress of it going. You can click on the job. You can see the frames as
in real time.
In real time, as they're rendering, as they're coming out. You can play it. You can do everything.
And that's so the power of the Vray Cloud.
Yeah.
And so the API. And everything is based on the API of the Vray Cloud.
Right.
So it's a small application which is running inside the cluster and controls and do whatever you have to do inside the Vray Cloud. I mean, through the API.
It'd be really cool. Maybe you can do a little video of that and we can put it up on the lab site.
Yeah, we can.
Just to show people, like, hey, check out the little cool application we made in 10 days. It's really cool. Yeah, so let's do that. Next time when you get back to Bulgaria, maybe do a little Camtasia about that. It'll be cool. But the other big thing we did, really try to push it, because last year we showed V-Ray and Motion Builder running inside of a single computer, right, which was just running App SDK, and it had three cards in it. So it was running locally.
Right.
And it opened up the standard V-Ray browser that we normally have, and it was rendering live in that. Yes. And it was a pretty cool demo. Got a lot of attention, which was great. This year we did something a little bit different, which was pretty awesome. So the challenge was that everyone's like, oh, I only have three cards. What if I put a VCA there? And then there was literally people thinking about dropping a VCA in a motion capture stage and try to get that to work, or two or three VCAs. And it's starting to become expensive, right?
Yeah, it's expensive.
And we don't have three VCAs, right?
No, we have only one.
We have only one, and it's not really mobile. And it's loud.
Definitely not mobile. Yeah.
So you were thinking about it, and you said, let's try the cloud system. So what did you do in cloud?
So what we did is we tried to use all the VCAs which are available in the cluster in order to create a real-time distributed rendering.
Right.
So we use the same API of the Vray Cloud because Vray Cloud is sitting there. That works perfectly fine. We wanted to use the API like a small components and just compose small images, small tiles of a render of the single frame and then streaming back to the browser or any kind of application.
Right.
And we have to just little bit tweak the way that we are feeding data inside the App SDK, inside the Motion Builder. So we just send the data to the Vray Cloud through the ordinary internet. And then we created inside the Vray Cloud, we created some kind of a small application that is distributing all these changes of the scene to many render nodes. And again, we are using the same API, actually. We didn't do anything special, right? And all the images are then collected inside this special server. And the server is doing the compositing and creating JPEGs or any kind of compressed image.
Right.
And you can see it almost in real time. I mean, the latency wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad. And
yes.
So this is an interesting thing because I saw Doug Grobel today. Do you remember Doug Grobel, Flato? He was the head of software at DD. He's also...
Oh,
Yeah. And he's also in the Academy for the SciTech Award and stuff. Nice guy. Super nice guy. What I love about Doug is that he is super sweet and always excited about everything he talks about. So he does these.
That's the way.
Yeah, he's awesome. And he does these great talks at DD called Chalk Talk. And he does them on I think it's Thursday afternoons or Wednesday afternoons. And people come by and they, with their lunches, and he'll give a presentation. And it could be about anything. But like, I remember one time, as an example, he gave a presentation about important sampling because he said, I need to figure this out because it's a big subject right now going on in the academy and I need to get this out. So he gave a presentation on it to explain it. It's a really cool guy. Anyway, I showed him the V-Ray Motion Builder video that we did. And he was saying, oh, wow, that's cool. And he says, hold on. What's your latency? Because you immediately know the problem, right? Our problem is how do you get okay, I understand you can make these machines do really quick images and compose an image really fast, but you got to do that, compose it,
you got to send the data,
it,
wait for the data. Yeah.
You're relying on an internet connection.
Yeah,
so
you know, sometimes it gets freezed, you know, for a little bit,
right.
But it's not like all the time.
So the way, just the you know, all cards on the table, the way that I basically witnessed it is if we had a half a second buffer in there, which is a lot of latency,
that's a lot.
It plays
really
very smoothly.
Yeah.
But if you did it down to like three frames, and I've done it one, two, three frames, it would be a little bit choppy, but it was much more real time.
Yeah.
And it depends again on your internet connection.
Yeah.
And it relies on the internet connection, because I noticed sometimes when we had, you know, a lot, you know, during the peak Netflix hour of the United States, it's harder to actually do that.
But the really tricky thing here is that, you know, all the streaming services right now, like Netflix and everything, they're buffering a lot of data inside and they're not knowing real time.
No, it's not real time.
And
right.
Now we're fighting latency, and that's a big issue, right?
Right.
So if you have, let's say, maybe 2, 3, 4 VCA servers, which are expensive, but hardware like this inside your local network, then the latency will be like maybe 30 milliseconds, which is nothing.
30 milliseconds is nothing.
30 to 50 milliseconds, which is nothing. Yeah.
Right. But not everyone has that. So,
no.
But if someone wants to say, hey, I got V-Ray running in Motion Builder, and then I can just tap into cloud for an hour.
Yeah, it's possible
awesome.
To. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it's possible to do that, which would be
absolutely possible,
which would be really great. So this is something we're going to continue working on, struggling
yes.
with that, but it's interesting. And what we saw was unbelievable quality. Because we were doing much lower resolution last year than we were this year, and still the quality was even higher this year.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. We're going from 3 GPUs to 32 GPUs. So
right.
It better look good at that point, right?
Yeah. Well, so, we also have a problem that we not only have to get data back to the user, we also have to send data from Motion Builder to the cloud for rendering.
Right.
So if you look at things like playing video games online, the game itself runs on a server. So the only thing that gets sent back is the mouse and keyboard commands. So that's
right.
A really small amount of information.
Right.
And you only have to worry about sending the images back as a video stream or something.
Right.
But we send quite a lot of data
from Motion Builder.
From Motion Builder, because we have to track the character positions in the camera.
Right.
So it's a little bit more complicated.
Now, since people have been asking me nonstop, maybe we can bring it up, maybe we can't, or maybe you can give them the same answer that I always give. Are we actually making a product for V-Ray for Motion Builder? That is a good question, because I think
everybody is asking here.
Everyone is asking.
Yeah.
And I say, well, it's a great idea for us. It's a great thing for us to test out new ideas and do things with. And I think eventually, I'd be curious, to be honest, I'll just ask the users, if you guys think this is a product that you would be interested in, then let us know, and then maybe we can think about doing that. But there's a lot of things that we can do. Possibly.
Yeah. But there's also a lot of work that needs to go into it to make it a product that people can use. Right now, it's just a very hacky collection of Python scripts.
It is, but it's also the other problem is that Motion Builder is not designed to do what we're asking it to do.
Right, yeah. and we were very, very lucky, because Kevin's film is all about robots. So
right.
We only had parts that move and only transformations change. We don't really have deformations, mesh
right.
deformations. So if we want to do mesh deformations, it's a lot more data to send to the render servers.
It will
servers.
Be a completely different story, by the way.
And
yeah.
we'll probably have to, if we need to do that, we'll probably have to just take the information about the rig and send it and actually do the skinning in V-Ray itself.
In V-Ray itself.
So, and this is a whole other problem that I'm not sure that we can do it.
Right.
If we decide to, but not sure if we should go in that direction.
Right. Well, it's something that that's the challenge, right, is to do that, especially if we have to go over to cloud and it just becomes
yeah.
a big problem.
Yeah. But even if you are in a local network, just you can't really send deforming meshes at 30 frames per second to your render server.
Well, but I mean, this is something we are looking into as an idea.
Yeah.
Because I think it's important that people know that. But it's still an interesting thing. But if you guys are curious about it or want to know about more about it, let us know and or you know, see what you think could be possible, because I think it'd be good for people to understand that. So I know that you've got a thing at 7, so we're going to cut out early on this podcast, but what's new to come? What's some of the things that you think people should get excited about?
I think one of the very interesting things that we're working right now is the ability to connect maybe Max or Maya directly to the cloud. So that will be a huge thing because, you know, everybody can use, you know, the VCA servers, for example, and still be in the workstation and get the rendering power of so many GPUs.
So you're thinking that cloud could eventually just be an option inside of the render dialog, right?
Right now, users can use a VCA machine and connect it as a DR server for VRT in Max and Maya. They can still get interactive ActiveShade or IPR in Maya, and it works really well.
Yes.
But if you want better quality, you need more machines, and because the VCAs generate really a lot of data that we need to process. It can't really happen over just standard internet connection. It may be fine if the machine is close to you and you have a local network. But if we want to do this in a cloud somewhere through the internet, that this is not going to work. Which is where the VRA cloud is very helpful, because it was designed to do VRA rendering in a cluster of machines.
Right.
And it will be great if users can just use the VRA cloud as a render server for VRA for Max and Maya.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So
that's coming.
So you'll be able to do cloud rendering right from your dialog box in some way, shape, or form.
This is something that we want to do.
Yeah.
And we know. I mean, we're working right now on this. Because, you know, and the other thing is that VRA cloud will take care about like distribution facets. You can have DR inside the cluster, for example, or inside the cloud itself.
Right.
So you can attach, let's say, 10, 20, 50 machines.
Right.
And you're going to have like one single head unit that will stream back images to you.
Right.
And it will be, I hope it will be crazy good.
Yeah. Well, you never disappoint, Plug, of course. So.
Yeah.
Anything else coming on the GPU that's new, or more features being added every day? Or
Let's get through the next series pack first and finish what we started so far.
Do we do volumetrics on the GPU yet?
We did some experiments. We got things working, but they were not really ready for production yet, so we still have more work to do on that.
Okay.
We managed to hook up our GLSL implementation.
So GLSL is working inside of the GPU.
Yeah, but it actually, it's very interesting because we use LLVM to generate the PTX code. So GLSL, we compile that to bytecode, which is then compiled with LLVM. And it turned out that actually any language that can work with LLVM, we can actually make it run on that GPU.
Right.
So we can do the same thing with the open shading language. We can do the same thing with any other language that has an LLVM backend.
So we also support OSL and OpenGL.
We don't right now, but it should be really easy.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's coming.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Great. So there's a lot of those features that are just coming. People should be aware of that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's cool. And then, we do support displacement now. That's another thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we forgot about that. Displacement on the GPU. Now, and what are the memory requirements there? It generates more geometry, obviously.
Yeah, it generates more geometry.
But it still works?
Yeah.
And it works view-dependent as well?
It's view-dependent tessellation, so objects that are close by will be tessellated more than objects that are far away.
Great.
So it's not that bad.
Right. And it doesn't. Oh, that's the thing you were telling me. I now remember. It because it's on the GPU, you have to displace the whole thing at once. You can't.
Yeah. Right now, we just generate the whole displacement mesh on the CPU in advance, and we then upload it on the GPU as a regular.
Great. And then another feature that we added last year that I think some people may not also aware is we support light cache as well.
Yes, actually, that's one of the things that made the GPU a lot more usable for architecture renderings and all kinds of renderings, actually.
Right.
Because before that, it was just a brute force path tracer. And even though it's faster than the CPU, it still took a long time to get a clean image.
Right.
But with the light cache, it's a lot faster than it was before.
And is the light cache generated on the GPU too?
Right now, no. It's generated on the CPU.
But it doesn't take very long.
Well, yeah, luckily it doesn't take that long. And we'll be looking at ways to move that to the GPU as well.
Right.
Eventually. But right now, even the way it works right now is very useful.
Yeah. So remember, guys, if you want really a lot of GI bounces and a lot of great interior lighting, you need a BIOS system in order to get that to work, because otherwise you'll be
you'll
be very, very, very slow with an unbiased system.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that was great, guys. I'm going to let Vlado go. He's got a lot of meetings here. He's been very, very busy, and Borsis as well. I'm going to go to the bar because there's a party going on right now. So I'll see you guys later. And thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.